Hello, my name is Marlene. And I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. Vegan Nation is a program about the vegan evolution, revolution, happening worldwide. Manifesting peace, freedom, health, wellness, and liberation. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station nor its management. In this episode, we'll be joined by Amanda Rose, the co-founder of VegFest and a member of the Wampanoag tribe of Gayhead Aquina. Amanda will be telling us about the delicious vegan dishes at the Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck that was recently held in Boylston, Massachusetts on November 18th, and a story of the Native American perspective of the first Thanksgiving. Amanda will also be telling us about the celebration of the turkeys held at Unity Farm Sanctuary in Sherbourne, Massachusetts on November 19th. Amanda will be joining us after the break. First, here's an announcement of the memorial service to celebrate the life of Karen Davis. Dr. Karen Davis, founder-director of United Poultry Concerns. The memorial service is Saturday, November 25th, in Matchapongo, Virginia. Here's a snippet of a recent talk by Dr. Karen Davis. This was conducted by Animal Activism Mentorship, and the recording is from United Poultry Concerns website. Here's Dr. Davis. Turkeys, who are they, and why should we care?
Turkey, what they call the turkey grow out houses, the, you know, thousands of them are put in a shed wall to wall. They become very quickly because they're forced to grow so large in such a short amount of time. But turkeys need to learn things from their mothers. Well, I think most people listening to this by now realize that turkeys are born, as are chickens, in huge mechanical incubator drawers. And these incubators are full of drawers from the top to the bottom, and in these massive hatcheries. And so the industry has it so that, I don't know if you hear my rooster out there crowing, that's Rupert. He says, I remember where I was born in a hatchery. I don't want to hear that story. I got out of there, unfortunately. I'm getting angry just hearing about it. But anyway, so these turkeys are hatched, and then they are just thrown onto these metal carousels with long slides. And the turkeys go down these slides, and they now, they may go to the debeaking machinery where somebody just sits there all day and just debeaks turkeys and chickens. And of course, as most people probably know who are listening, chickens, turkeys, and all birds have very, very sensitive beaks.
We're listening to a talk by Dr. Karen Davis. The title is Turkeys, Who Are They and Why Should We Care? This was recorded in 2022, and we're hearing a shortened, edited snippet of it. It's approximately an hour and a half talk. And now Dr. Davis talks a bit about the experimentation in laboratories that many people are not aware of, that a lot of laboratory experimentation goes on in the animal agriculture and, of course, pharmaceutical industry.
What can you do beyond just getting more grants, more taxpayer grants, more NIH grants, which, again, are taxpayer grants, to keep doing these inane and really cruel, very cruel experiments. So we did these things to farm animals. We, you know, mutilated them. So again, anybody who thinks that the family farm was this nice, lovely place, really, it wasn't. And I have a lot to say about the family farm in More Than a Meal, the turkey in history, myth, ritual, and reality, how turkeys were actually treated. And in my book, Prison Chickens, Poisoned Eggs, an inside look at the modern poultry industry, I have a lot to say and to show about what the kinds of behaviors that were just part of regular farming that evolved into what we know as factory farming. Anyway, so Eldon Keenholz described this one particular experiment he did with baby chickens and turkey poults, that is baby turkeys. He said, well, we wanted to see if we cut off the wings and the tails of newborn chicks and newborn turkeys, if not they're not having to grow those appendages, could we save the industry, the turkey industry and the chicken industry, 75% of the cost of feeding them, something like that. So that's what they did. The chickens and turkeys, all they are is something to make meat out of. So they're really viewed as just a thing in process of becoming either eggs or meat. The rest of the body and the needs of the birds are just a kind of something in the way to get that breast muscle tissue and those eggs out of. So meanwhile, you've got a fully developed consciousness in a bird, a consciousness that is not valued at all. Everybody should know that when these birds are sent to the slaughterhouses, and again, the slaughter of turkeys and chickens and other birds by regular farmers prior to the 1930s, when the big slaughter plants were developed, so-called do-it-yourself farmers do this even now, but they take a knife up into the groove of the roof of the mouth of the birds and scramble their brains with it in order, and sometimes even go into their eye, through their eye, up to their brain, to scramble their brain so they become paralyzed, fully conscious, because that will cause the feathers to come out more easily, the pores to open, so that the feathers will come out more easily after they have been scalded, many scalded alive. Well, in the modern huge chicken and turkey slaughter plants, what they use is electricity to paralyze the muscles of their feather follicles. And the turkeys are grabbed, they're hung upside down. And since they are very heavy, being hung upside down, shackled by their ankles, you might say, it is so hard on their hip joints. They're just, this is this big, heavy animal hanging upside down, which is so painful to their bodies. And then they are sent through these big splashing troughs full of electrified water. And can you imagine electricity, suddenly what, electrified water going through your eyeballs and your eardrums and your heart and your lungs? I mean, that is total torture. Whenever I hear anybody say, well, you like, now they're talking in the fishing industry about stunning them before they tear them apart and all this, you know, lobsters and others, I'm saying, if it's electricity, don't call it stunning, because it is not stunning. And if you read the industry literature, you understand they're not interested in rendering these birds either pain-free or unconscious. That's not the purpose of what they call stunning. So after they have been subjected to this, going through this electrified water, fully conscious, and then they have their necks partially cut by these revolving blades, and then sometimes there's a backup person to finish the job, and then they hang upside down, bleeding out. They force them to stay alive so that their hearts will keep beating out the blood, and then they are thrown into scald tanks. And many chickens and turkeys, millions and millions every year in this country alone, to say nothing of all the other countries as well, are scalded alive. And as Virgil Butler described the chicken slaughter plant he worked in for years in Arkansas, he said that the chickens, referring to the chickens, he said, they struggle so much in their scald tanks that their eyeballs pop out of their heads. And he said they scream, even though they're babies, like they're screaming, and they break their bones struggling in the scald tanks. So imagine that this is called, this is considered a wholesome Thanksgiving meal. I mean, you're eating a bird who was tortured from inception to destruction.
This song is by Ellie Sarti. She is the founder of Compassion Arts Festival, a vegan and an ordained animal chaplain. This song is about Virgil Butler, a man who worked the kill floor at a slaughterhouse and then had an epiphany of consciousness and became an animal activist and advocate for peace for all beings.
The sun goes
down. Dr. Davis invited Virgil to be a speaker at her conference, the UPC Forum, United Poultry Concerns Forum, in 2004 in Virginia. Virgil Butler died at the age of 41, December 15th, 2006. His death was with mysterious surroundings. He was found dead in his car in front of his house. He was a whistleblower in the animal ag slaughterhouse industry. Rest in power, Karen. Rest in peace, Virgil. The sun goes down. I dedicate this song to Dr. Karen Davis.
We just have to help people to try to understand that there is nothing wholesome about what they are putting in their mouths, that they are eating a mouthful of misery and a taste of torture. That's what they're consuming. And it's too bad for words. I mean, you cannot exaggerate. In fact, I don't think we can even imagine what it's like for these birds. So I guess it's time to say what we say for every turkey on their behalf. Don't gobble me. And in fact, we're going to run a bus ad starting on the 14th for a month in Pittsburgh this year. I think I said we're going to say, like the turkey is talking to the person. Be a do-gooder this year. Don't gobble me. Go vegan. Okay, we'll see how many people actually say, okay, turkey, I'm going to do what you say. I'm not going to gobble you this year or ever again.
You tuned into Vegan Nation. Soon we'll be joined by Amanda Rose to hear about the Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck.
The sun goes down at night. He takes his place upon the line. Separates his from his mind until he feels no more. This machine will work a soul until it's undone. Till soon you're just a part of how it runs. Virgil Butler awoke to put the knife down. He worked the killing floor. The sun goes down from the border hands arrive. Someone takes Virgil's place in line where they will feel no more. Hostage to an industry and empire, enslaved and laid to waste in the downpipe. They kill to live until we put our knives down. They'll work the kill.
Down by Ellie Sarti. Thank you for tuning in to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow, in Worcester, Massachusetts. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll be joined by Amanda Rose, tribal member of Wampanoag Tribe of Aquanaw and co-founder of VegFest. This is The Chicken Song by Will Tuttle. the break, and thank you very much for tuning in to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene, in Massachusetts. We're joined by Amanda Rose, tribal member of the Wampanoag tribe of Aquina. Amanda is the co-founder of VegFest. She's joining us via Skype in Worcester, Massachusetts. And her personal project is a social media site called The Veg Panda. All sorts of delicious vegan food and dishes and photographs. Welcome, Amanda. Thank you very much for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you for having me, Marlene. I'm excited to talk with folks today about a few different things that are of interest for this time of year, which is the vegan Thanksgiving, as well as kind of a Native perspective on the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yes, so I'd like to hear about some of the vegan dishes at the Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck in Boylston, Massachusetts, that you, along with your teammates at VegFest, hosted.
Yeah, so this past weekend, along with my teammates at the nonprofit New England VegFest, I was able to organize a large vegan Thanksgiving potluck. We have a fun time putting it together. At first, we were nervous, are folks going to come out and, you know, prepare a vegan dish? Ultimately, we had over 100 attendees that came out. So it really shows that there's an interest in the vegan alternative to the traditional turkey-focused Thanksgiving meal. So some of the main vegan dishes that we had were a variety of plant-based roasts, and that came along with a gravy, a meat-free stuffing of a few varieties. We had some awesome appetizers as well, like a gorgeous vegan charcuterie board. We had some snacks like pistachios, dairy-free cheese and crackers. Some of the side dishes were just amazing. There was green bean casserole, fried tofu, focaccia bread, a creamy pumpkin pasta, which was one of my favorites. I had to request the recipe afterwards. There was a vegan stromboli, maple glazed carrots, even a big bowl of mashed potatoes, roasted sweet potatoes, and then fresh things like cucumber salad, fruit salad, just that kind of cold, fresh fruit, which is always great on the table as well with the roast. And then one of the highlights for many was we had a huge table. It was full of desserts, all lovingly made by our attendees. There was just about every pie, like every vegan pie that you can think of. It was pumpkin, apple, berry pie, chocolate pie. We had a variety of brownies, cookies, vegan Rice Krispie squares, and cake. So, I mean, really, there was so much. I'm pretty sure there was something for everybody. Guests were able to return a few times to fill up their plates. And it was really just a colorful, colorful spread. It was amazing to see so many people lining up to this long table filled with all these, you know, lovingly prepared plant-based dishes, and just, you know, bringing that vegan community together all in one place.
Awesome. That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah. And aside from the food, which, you know, was the main focus of everyone gathering together, what we tried to really do was interweave a message of compassion for animals throughout the event, and also community and gratitude. We had several organizations present with vegan arts and crafts. We had activities, vegan Thanksgiving activities, and merchandise. So it kind of gave some resources for people to take in and explore following sharing a meal with their community.
That's great. Much thanks to all who participated. And I would love to hear a little bit about your presentation that you gave at the Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck, your presentation on the first Thanksgiving.
As you had said, you know, I'm a member of the Wampanoag tribe of Aquina, and I follow a vegan lifestyle. So I feel that it gives me a unique perspective on some of the issues that the traditional holiday of Thanksgiving, and what we've been able to sort of reclaim that as a Thanksgiving for vegans, but also recognizing it as a national day of mourning for Indigenous communities. Here in New England, I gratefully acknowledge and invite you to join me in just taking a moment to honor the Native peoples on which, on whose ancestral homelands that we are gathering, as well as to acknowledge the diverse and vibrant Native communities who make their home here today, like the Wampanoag. You know, we were here before and we're here now. So sadly, many Indigenous people are still being pushed from their communities and other parts of the world. We may not see it on the mainstream media. We may not want to face that reality, but it's happening to Indigenous cultures today, right at this moment. So it's even more important now to draw attention to the complex history in America so that we can learn from it and hopefully progress forward. So, I mean, there are strong parallels between the animal suffering as well as suffering of human beings. So just acknowledge and respecting the complexity of issues around Thanksgiving. Being a member of both of those communities, really you see the way that it ties together. So November is the month, Native American Heritage Month. You know, just to be clear, I'm not speaking on behalf of my tribe specifically as a whole or those with Indigenous backgrounds in general. So my perspective is solely my personal experience. But the first thing to do is just to acknowledge and honor that culture and history. The truth is that the magical story of the pilgrims and Indians sitting down to a big harvest meal peacefully is not how it happened. The story that we're used to hearing goes something like this. The pilgrims arrive in Plymouth, that cold winter's coming. The Wampanoag welcome them with open arms, teaching them their ways. And as thanks, they all sit down to this hearty Thanksgiving feast with the turkey and the gravy and the mashed potatoes. And we all live happily ever after. And, you know, growing up, I mean, for me in the 80s and 90s, when I was growing up, I think many of us had that experience in school of making the pilgrim hats and the feather head dresses out of construction paper. And we're dancing around with the, you know, Indians and pilgrims in the storybooks. And it's a nice sounding story, but, you know, just like what's going on in the vegan movement, you know, we find out what you think is the nice sounding story, it's really not the reality. The ancestors of Wampanoag people have lived for at least 10,000 years at Aquinnah and throughout the island of Martha's Vineyard. And in short, what it all boils down to is that the Wampanoag people underwent a very, very difficult history after assisting pilgrims in the early 1600s. It's thought that the Wampanoag tribe's interactions with the pilgrims of Plymouth Colony were more of a fact-finding mission. So they wanted to learn more about the settlers who had been shooting guns and cannons toward the native peoples. So they had sent out, you know, search parties to find out what's going on here, you know. The vast majority of these tribal communities along the coast were killed in battles. So, you know, the disease wiped them out. Whoever was left, you know, many of them were killed in battles, and those were all initiated by colonists to secure land. So today, only several visible tribal communities remain. One of them is the Wampanoag tribe of Aquinnah, which is the, you know, tribe that I'm part of, and we're still here. So yeah, linking these kind of communities through preservation efforts is essential for survival of the arts and the traditions that, you know, are at risk at being lost, you know, the language, all of that. So it's really important for folks to kind of hear a little bit of the story, you know, and acknowledge it. Yeah, I won't go too much deeper because the information is all out there within reach. Native American History Month or Indigenous Peoples Month, which encompasses all Indigenous folks, is this month. And so if you go to your library, they often have some books from Native voices, which is great.
Thank you, Amanda. Thank you very much. And I know that you have information about a special dish.
Yeah. So, you know, this experience of how the Wampanoag should also resonate with those who are vegan. You know, we've awakened, we've accepted the myth behind the traditional turkey. Wampanoags often created dishes with three ingredients called the Three Sisters, which was corn, beans, and squash. So those crops were traditionally planted and grown together. So you can easily make a Three Sisters bean, corn, and squash salad that would be vegan as well as a traditional Wampanoag dish. So for a fall dish, I'd use like a butternut squash. If I was doing a summer dish, I would do like zucchini or summer squash. And then you can add whatever kind of beans, cannellini, kidney beans, fresh corn, arugula, any kind of greens, red onion, basil, and then just finish it off whatever kind of vinaigrette. And you could add tomatoes or cranberries to that even. Tribal members also harvest acres of wild cranberry bogs each year and that grow on the tribal lands. So that's something that's still happening in modern times. It's called Cranberry Day. and that's the annual harvesting of the fruit. It's been a centuries-long celebration passed down by the elders as part of the Aquinnah Wampanoag history. I'm not an island resident, but I'm hoping to bring my son in the coming year to participate in some of these activities. So you could, you know, certainly make a cranberry relish or a cranberry bread, and that would be a vegan Wampanoag dish. Or you could do a roasted root veggies. That's another one. Have it be vegan.
Thank you very much, Meanda.
This is for the fallen. This is for the fallen. All the non-human animals victimized by non-vegans for stupid traditions. Stupid traditions. This is for you. This is always for you. Shout out to Will Blends. Thank you for the beat, bro.
Let's have a little musical interlude by Entice.
Entice.
The lyrical vegan.
So nice. I do this right here for animal rights. You said you thankful for your family and friends, everyone in between. Can't wait to get together, have some fun with the teams. Making fun of grandpa's cutting his jeans, or the fact that his teeth can only suck up the beans. You said your family means everything. You always want to protect them, you do anything. But that turkey on your table, they don't get the same. They want that life and kids too, you give them death and pain. Crammed with a thousand of their kind, yeah, they go insane. So they cut their toes and their beaks so they don't fight and bang. Cause if he don't, the flesh is damaged, that's how he gets paid. This oppression you paying for every single day. You don't care if it means a few splattered brains. You don't care if it means a few severed veins. Then you have the nerve to thank the Lord for your corpse remains. He's not blessing your bloodshed, but the devil may. Let's start new traditions. You know the ones where they don't scream for their mother from birth to kitchen. The ones where freedom don't fly by them just like pigeons. Traditions where oppression, you no longer live it. That knife to the throat, you no longer give it. Traditions full of cruelty, you no longer pick it. Traditions where a dead bird, you no longer wish it. Traditions where your violence stops and you start to listen. Your Thanksgiving is more like Thanksgiving. Stop sending them to their death and turn it to thanks living. Someone else's suffering is nothing to be thankful for. You're a sadist if you think it is, and hell is what's in store. That's a tough pill to swallow, truth hurts even more. Being blinded and not caring is what that demon's for. So start fighting them, take that bitch right to war. And stop being so cruel, you'll see what their life is for. And it's not for you, for you.
I would love to hear about your experience at the celebration of the turkeys at Unity Farm Sanctuary in Sherbourne, Massachusetts.
Yeah, so I visited Unity Farm Sanctuary yesterday. You know, it's just a really amazing experience to go and, you know, really see that they are each individual, you know, beings. And they had one of my favorite animal residents there is a turkey named Handsome Paul. They're our friends, not food.
Thank you, Manda. Thank you, and thank you, Unity Farm Sanctuary. Manda, this is a great honor for your presence in general on this planet, and your presence here on Vegan Nation. Thank you. And what contact information can you share with our listeners?
You can visit me at TheVegPanda on Instagram. It's actually at Instagram.com/TheVegPanda. You can also find me on Facebook as TheVegPanda. And if you want to learn more about VegFest and New England VegFest, you can go to nevegfest.org or vegfest.org and find out some about some of the amazing events that we put together all throughout the year, including the Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck, which we hope to do again next year, as well as our big event, which is the New England VegFest coming up, I believe it's June 9th in the spring. So join us there and you can learn more and get involved.
Great. Thank you, Manda. As an announcement, November 22nd, there's a vegan buffet at Love and Tuck Vegan Restaurant, Chandler Street in Worcester, noon to 8 p.m. Much thanks for tuning in to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlena, Massachusetts. Please join us again next week at the same time. You can hear this program again at vegansradio.com. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
I would just like to encourage folks to go vegan for this Thanksgiving.